Welcome to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We are made of water. It sustains us, and yet we're mostly, well, let me say, I am mostly ignorant about it. Governor Jerry Brown released a draft of plans to build twin tunnels under the Bay Delta. They're designed to carry water from the north to farms and cities in central and southern California. Some environmentalists say the plan is dangerous and destructive to the Delta's fragile ecosystem. Others have proposed compromises like building smaller tunnels. What are the environmental and political options around water policy and the Delta plan? And how do we balance concerns about ecosystems, safe and abundant water, conservation, and cost? What do you want to understand about where your water comes from and the future of water in California? Well, joining us to discuss the Delta plan and water in the Golden State, I'm joined in studio by Doug Obigi. He's senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, which is an organization that believes the Bay Delta Conservation Plan needs to be scaled down. Hi, Doug.
Hi. Thank you, Holly.
Thanks for joining us. And by phone, we've got Adam Scow on the line. He's the California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch, which is an organization that opposes the Bay Delta Conservation Plan as currently configured. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
Thank you for joining us. All right. Well, so let's get some basic information out for our listeners, and then I'll give out the number for people to join our conversation. Where does our water come from right now, and where does it go, Doug?
Well, the simple answer to that question is that it comes out of your tap. But, you know, the reality is that...
That's all I know.
Exactly. That's where most people know. But our water in California comes from a variety of different places. Here in the Bay Area, we get our water from the Bay Delta watershed, which covers about 40% of California's landmass. The Delta is an area that's formed by the confluence of the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers, California's two largest rivers. And the Delta as a whole supplies water throughout California. We have two massive water projects, the State Water Project and Central Valley Project, that divert water out of the Delta watershed down to Los Angeles, down to Southern California. Most of that water goes to agriculture in the San Joaquin Valley. Most of California's water goes to agriculture.
And it's in going down in canals right now.
That's correct. We have these two massive pumps that put water in canals, and the governor has proposed a plan to build two tunnels and three massive intakes near the city of Sacramento and to divert the water before it even gets to the Delta.
Okay, so, and that's the draft of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan that was just recently released by Governor Jerry Brown.
That's right. This is a plan that's been 7 years in the making. There's a lot of concern about this plan, whether it would work for fisheries, whether it actually improves water supplies for customers, and whether it's affordable. And, you know, unfortunately, it's one of those things that's kind of flown under the radar screen, but people are going to be asked to pitch in a lot of money over the next 20 to 30 years, and it's coming up for decisions in the next year or so.
And we're looking at least $25 billion total cost for the tunnel and conservation plan. And I'll give out some of the estimates on those numbers. These are just estimates right now. Adam, is there anything that you want to add to Doug's description of the draft proposal of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan?
I think he got it right. And it's as some of the listeners will know, this is the repeat of the peripheral canal, which was defeated by California voters in 1982. After then, Governor Brown and the California legislature barely passed it. About 1 million signatures were collected in 1 month to force a referendum, and it was defeated, I believe, in June of 1982. So fast forward 30 years, Jerry Brown is back, and this project is back, and you got to hand it to his PR people, giving it the name the Bay Delta Conservation Plan, because it's pretty much the opposite.
And so what's the difference between this new proposal for tunnels and the 1982 defeat of the peripheral canal proposal?
The main difference is that we have two tunnels now, and then it was a canal, a surface canal that went around the perimeter of the Delta, hence the name peripheral canal. And now this project has the two tunnels, 35 miles, 40 feet wide each, going directly under the Delta to the big pumps that exist near Tracy, California, by that 580 overpass.
Okay, and so, and Doug, you say that a survey recently showed that 75% of Californians don't even know where the Delta is on a map, even though a third of Californians get some of their water from the Delta. So can you give us a quick description of it and the ecosystem that we're talking about here?
Absolutely. It's a really pretty amazing and beautiful place. These two massive rivers come together, and historically this area was tidal marsh and wetlands as far as the eye could see, you know, surveyors and people who were traveling through in the 1800s saw tules, these reeds that were 12 feet, 15 feet high, you know, a massive wildlife. It's been reclaimed for primarily agriculture nowadays. You've got a number of major cities like Sacramento that are just on the outside of the Delta. Many of these islands have subsided as a result of farming practices, so they are actually below sea level now. So when you're standing on the levee, you're looking out over the water and you look down on the land, it can be a little disconcerting, but it's really beautiful, and it's critically important to our wildlife. California salmon runs that support thousands of fishing jobs across the coast all come through the Golden Gate. They come through the Bay Delta and then swim up the Sacramento and San Joaquin Rivers to spawn. It's also hugely important for migratory waterfowl like ducks and geese and birds. And there are some amazingly beautiful places. If you've never been, it's a great place to go visit.
And so each of you represents an organization that is concerned about conservation, preserving our ecosystem. So can each of you talk about your main concerns and differences with each other about this draft of a plan, the Bay Delta Conservation Plan? Do you want to start, Adam?
Well, sure. We see the process and the project as deeply flawed. And if there's a perception that this is some sort of public process, but it's really a process driven by the three big water players in California, and that's the Westlands Water District, the Kern County Water Agency, and the Metropolitan Water District. And they've been very clear that they're not interested in the project unless it's going to continue to give them the amount of water that they are demanding. The big problem with the Delta, from our perspective, is that they are simply taking too much water. It's important to remember, sometimes people get confused. We're already exporting water out of the Delta. In the last 10 to 15 years, we have been exporting more and more water, and it has come at a direct cost to the environment and to the salmon runs Doug was talking about. The Metropolitan Water District, Kern, and Westlands are all demanding to continue those record levels of amount. We're talking 5 to 6 million acre feet of water out of the Delta, and that is the problem that cannot be sustained. So that's the principal problem, is that they're taking too much water. This tunnel project is intended to continue those over-exports of water. Now, to add in...
Hold on, Adam, let me just get you to... Adam, can I get you to... Adam, can I get you to just explain a little bit more to us who these three water contractors
are?
Thanks.
So Kern County Water Agency and Westlands Water District, they take about two-thirds to three-quarter of the water out of the Delta. So they're the main players taking most of the water. We're talking about some of the biggest corporate agribusiness interests in the country, in Westlands and in Kern. Most famously, Stuart Resnick, Beverly Hills billionaire who owns Paramount Farms. Paramount Farms is the largest grower, shipper, exporter of almonds and pistachios in the world. In addition, he owns the Kern County Water Bank, a massive underground water storage facility, where he takes taxpayer-subsidized water and is able to sell it for private profit out on the open market to the highest bidder. That's down in Kern. Also in Kern, we have oil companies that are looking to expand their operations through fracking. And as your listeners probably know, fracking takes a lot of water, much more water than conventional drilling. And one of the big questions for the fracking companies is, where are they going to get some of their water? There's no question that the Delta is a major source of water for oil and fracking. The third player is the Metropolitan Water District of Southern California. Now, just because they're from Southern California, that doesn't mean they represent the interests of the people of Southern California. This is their own water grab. Metropolitan sells water to cities in Southern California. That is their business model. They buy and sell water. And when you look at water policy throughout the history of California and a project of this magnitude, it's all about controlling the water over the next 50 to 100 years. So when you look at actual use, however, in Southern California, cities like L.A., Long Beach, Santa Monica are actually using less water from the Delta than ever before, and their own water plans call for reducing use from the Delta, in part because it's already getting more and more expensive with energy prices going up. Yet Metropolitan has its own agenda. So Metropolitan, Westlands, and Kern are really calling the shots in this project.
Well, thank you for clarifying that. And I don't know if I cut you off from making another point about what your main concerns are with the Bay Delta Conservation Plan.
Yeah, well, I was saying not only do they want to take the water, but now they want us to pay for it. And that'll come through a taxpayer bond and through higher water rates in Southern California. But not just Southern California. Also, we have the Santa Clara Valley Water District in San Jose and that general area as a potential sponsor of the plan. Now, the state has refused to do an accurate cost analysis of this project and what it would mean for people's water rates and for state taxpayers. Now, we know that there's a $3 to $5 billion estimated cost to pay for some of the mitigation and restoration that's currently in a water bond slated for the ballot next year. But the bulk of the construction and operating costs, $25 billion to $50 billion, is going to have to come from those water rates in Southern California and in the Santa Clara Valley Water District. We did a cost analysis for just Los Angeles. We estimated that LA's share alone of the project is from $2 to $8 billion, about $2,000 to $8,000 per household over a 30, 40-year financing period with interest. So the concern about this is that the ratepayers and taxpayers of the state actually do need to spend a lot of money fixing our existing water infrastructure. I'm talking about fixing our sewer plants, investing in stormwater infrastructure, cleaning up groundwater, fixing up all the existing pipes that are literally right now underneath our feet. That's going to cost $80 to $100 billion. We don't have money to waste on a special $50 billion tunnel project for Metropolitan, Westlands, and Kern. It's unfair, it's wrong, and we don't have the money to waste.
And that's Adam Scow. He's California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch, which is an organization that opposes the draft Bay Delta Conservation Plan that's been released by Governor Jerry Brown. We're also joined by Doug Obigi. He's a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council, and we'll get his concerns and priorities with regard to the Bay Delta Conservation Plan in just a minute. But let me give out the number so that you can join our conversation. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan, and we're talking about the proposed Bay Delta Conservation Plan specifically and about California water needs, costs, and conservation in California. Do you know where your tap water comes from? You can join our conversation at 866-798-8255. It's a toll-free number, 866-798-TALK. Or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. What questions do you have about the proposed Bay Delta Water Conservation Plan? And are you getting enough information about this? And what's a fair way to pay for our water? 866-798-8255 is our toll-free number. And you can also email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. We have resources for you to look at and read about this draft plan and some of the concerns and pros and cons at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. Okay, so let me get to you, Doug. What are your main concerns about the current draft proposal? You feel like it should be scaled back rather than completely off the table. What are your main priorities in shaping it? What do you think are the...
Yeah, so we filed suit. We filed litigation back in the mid-2000s when we saw the current projects taking so much water out of the Delta and killing so many fish at the existing pumps in the South Delta. These pumps are so large that they effectively make water flow backwards. Instead of flowing towards the ocean as it would naturally, it flows upstream towards the pumps. The pull of the pumps is so large. And it pulls fish, salmon, and smaller fish with it.
Why is that? What was the rationale?
We've sued under the Endangered Species Act saying that they were killing too many fish and they were actually causing the potential extinction of salmon and other species. And the court agreed with us and required them to turn down the pumps. They never turn them off, but they do turn them down. And when we looked at that information and we looked at the risks of a potential earthquake, we thought that there might be a potential to have something better than our existing system. But as Adam points out, one of the key concerns here is how much water you take out of the system. Changing the point of diversion so that you take water upstream of the delta can help reduce the number of fish that we kill at the pumps. These existing old pumps don't have effective fish screens. They massively change the hydrodynamics in the delta so that water's flowing backwards. Shifting the point of diversion doesn't deal with the fundamental concern about taking too much water out of the delta. And how much water flows through the delta and into San Francisco Bay is effectively the primary determinant for the abundance of a number of fish species, including some of the survival estimates for salmon through the delta. So we proposed an alternative that is scaled back. We don't know what the right size is, but we said use operations of a new facility and existing facility that are protective and science-based, that take less water out of the delta. And as Adam points out, let's invest the money saved from a smaller facility in the kinds of solutions that Southern California and the Silicon Valley want. Improved conservation, efficiency, water recycling plants, and stormwater capture. And by investing more money in those tools, we can create more new water for Californians than we've ever taken out of the delta.
And you say that we need to have this sort of lifeline from the delta, a way to pump water in times of great need. But you say it should be a big gulp, little sip approach. Explain that.
That's the sort of scientific rationale right now that's really taken hold, although I don't think the plan right now actually achieves it. The idea is that when water is most abundant in really wet years, you take more of it. And when water is dry, in a dry year where water is scarce, you take less of it because we need to save water in the rivers for our fish and wildlife. That requires having a system that allows you to move more water in wet years and less in dry. But of course, the real challenge is with the contractors who want to pay for this and, you know, ultimately the ratepayers, all of us who will get stuck with part of the bill, is how much more in wet and how much less in dry and how much overall.
And let's go to, we have a lot of callers on the line. Let's go to Gail in Menlo Park. Hi, Gail. Welcome to your call.
Oh, hi there. Yes. Well, I noticed that the last speaker talks about the South pumps being a problem, but the plans as written does nothing to upgrade the screens there. It is possible to design the screens better, and the plan as proposed does not close the south pumps. The plan as proposed would permit removing approximately twice as much water from the delta, and it does nothing to cap the outflow. The very first step should be to cap the outflow, but that's going to be a political struggle. And clearly, rather than all this building, we need to let the delta heal by letting it have the water that it needs. And that's not part of any proposed plan, a reasonable cap. So until we get that settled, all the other stuff is just mythological.
Well, let's get some comments from Adam and Doug. Thanks for that, Gail. And I'm wondering if you guys could explain what an acre foot of water actually is for those of us who are not immersed in water all the time.
So let's start with that easier one. An acre foot is the common measure in our business. It's imagine the size of about a football field, an acre of land covered by a foot of water deep.
Okay.
California agriculture, you know, we use more than 34 million acre feet of water per year. Most of that, 80% of that, goes to agriculture. And the caller is right. You know, the current proposal by the governor reduces the amount of use of the South Delta somewhat, but it still plans to use it. Even in the governor's proposed plan, more than half, about 51% of the water supply would come through those existing pumps. So in order to make the system reliable, we're going to have to invest in levees so that we can maintain those water supplies, and we're going to have to take less. I mean, I think the caller's spot on that we need to improve outflow to the bay to protect fish and wildlife and take less.
Do all of you agree with the Nature Conservancy, which says that the delta is on the verge of collapse and we need to do something about this? Adam, you go first.
Well, yes and no. We agree that the Food and Water Watch and our allies who are working to stop the tunnels agree that the primary problem, as we've been discussing, is that they're taking too much water. However, Nature Conservancy solution is to build the tunnels, and we deeply disagree with that. We think that only perpetuates and worsens the problem. And the caller was absolutely right. They're planning to not only change the point of diversion, but to continue pumping from the South Delta as well. The other problem with this project is there's a lot of great prime farmland, a lot of small family farmers in the Delta who would be wiped out by this project under the guise of environmental restoration. We support environmental restoration. We support wetlands restoration. We need to restore our wetlands. But it's a false premise that that's a good thing when we're going to remove all the water from the system. So we're disappointed, and we disagree with the Nature Conservancy's position. Our campaign website is stopthetunnels.org. This has been put together by Food and Water Watch, the California Water Impact Network, and Restore the Delta.
Stopthetunnels.org. All of that information is at yourcallradio.org. And Doug, what do you think of the Nature Conservancy's seeming to be behind this plan, saying, you know, the Delta is on the verge of collapse and at least this is a solution for restoration?
You know, I think we share a concern that, the Delta, the current practices in the Delta are unsustainable, and that it's going to take more than just improving flows and reducing exports to restore our natural wildlife. But it has to be done in a way that's smart, and that really focuses on restoring floodplains that have been shown scientifically to have great benefit for salmon. I think there's a lot of scientific uncertainty about tidal marsh restoration improving things for fish, and certainly I don't think there's any evidence that says you can restore habitat and not restore flows and expect to see fish come back.
And our editorial team, Adam, was a little shocked to see how little coverage this issue was getting, especially compared to 1982 when there was a big referendum on this and a public vote. How are people able to plug in with public participation, and what do you think people need to know to have informed opinions and potentially input around this issue?
Well, I'd say folks should go to our website, again, stopthetunnels.org. If you happen to live in the Santa Clara Valley Water District or in Southern California, really need to get in touch with your water board, elected water board members, or your city council if you're in a place. I think Alameda County Water District is also on the hook for paying for this project. So if you're worried about supporting this project with your dollars, you need to get in touch with your elected board members. We got a lot of information on our website. We have a frequently asked questions, and that's a great place to start.
Well, thank you for that. What about you, Doug? What kind of information do people need to be informed about this?
Well, I think one of the challenges here is that there isn't a public vote right now scheduled for this proposal. It's an administrative regulatory proposal. So it has kind of flown under the radar screen. And I think Adam's right that folks should be talking with their water suppliers. And we have a database on our website at nrdc.org that you can put in your zip code if you live in California and find out where your water actually comes from and find out what water districts are serving you so that you can be better informed. You know, ultimately, I think this will come down to, you know, whether it pencils out financially. And I think we will definitely be talking about that later. And
we'll talk about that right after our break. So go ahead and finish up.
From our perspective, one of the fundamental questions is, does it make sense for fish and wildlife? And I think the current plan has real challenges in achieving the restoration of the Delta ecosystem. It doesn't seem to be there yet. And so we've been working hard to provide, make sure that it does provide better flows, because we don't want to see a situation where we end up having to go into a massive opposition campaign and a really divisive fight, you know, in the courts, in the legislature. We'd like to see something that we could all work together, but we're not there yet.
And you said that this plan is 7 years in the making. What's the timeline in terms of implementation? The water bonds would have to go before the public. Does anything else have to
That's
be
the
voted
only
on?
Thing that would be voted on would be the state water bonds that would fund it. Otherwise, they're trying to get a environmental impact report and environmental impact statement for public comment out this fall.
And we'll put information and links to all of this at yourcallradio.org. You just heard from Doug Obeegi. He's a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And we're also joined by Adam Scow, who's the California Campaigns Director at Food and Water Watch. And we're talking about the proposed Bay Delta Conservation Plan. We have full lines. We'll go to callers after the break. You can send emails to feedback@yourcallradio.org with your questions. I'm Holly Kernan, you're listening to Your Call. We'll be right back after this short break.
This is Your Call on KALW, and if you have a perspective that you haven't heard in today's discussion or a question you feel needs to be answered, please get in touch by calling 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK. You can also email feedback@yourcallradio.org or post a comment or question at yourcallradio.org.
For those of you joining us now, I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. We're podcasting our show. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. That's also where you can listen to past shows and find out what's coming up next. Tomorrow, what did Martin Luther King's I Have a Dream speech mean in 1963, and what does it mean now, 50 years later? We'll have Guardian journalist Gary Young in studio to talk about his new book, The Speech, The Story Behind Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Dream. Friday, of course, is our weekly media roundtable. We'll talk with journalists about coverage of the week's news. And today, how should Bay Delta water be distributed in California? We're talking about California Governor Jerry Brown's plan to build twin tunnels under the Bay Delta. They're designed to carry, or they would be designed to carry water to farms and cities in the South and Central Valleys. Some environmentalists say the plan is dangerous and destructive to the Delta's fragile ecosystems. Others are proposing compromises like building smaller tunnels. So how do you think that the water should be distributed? Our lines are full, but you can send email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. And I'm joined in studio by Doug Obigi. He's a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Adam Scow is with us on the line. He is the California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch. And information about all of that and the proposed draft plan is at our website, which is yourcallradio.org. We have a lot of people on the line. I want to get to calls in just a second, but I want to ask each of you about some of the economic impacts. State water officials released a study saying that implementation of the Bay Delta Conservation Plan would lead to $4.8 billion to $5.4 billion in economic benefits for California water users. Critics are saying it would devastate the ecosystem and fisheries. It looks like they're saying that this would cost $25 billion to $50 billion in total cost for the tunnel conservation plan. $17 billion would come from water districts, which I think would mean ratepayers, right? $8 billion for restoration would come from state and federal money, including water bonds, which the voters would have to vote on. So do you want to, Adam, you've called this state water officials report bogus.
Well, yeah, they're pretty much making it up as they go along. This is on top of the fact that they refuse to do a comprehensive cost-benefit analysis, yet they're quick to engage in economic fantasy about the possible benefits. And some of their highlights of the report had the audacity to say this would have some sort of greenhouse gas benefit when the state water project already uses about 20% of the water consumed in California. I'm sorry, 20% of the energy, 20% of all the energy used in California is to move water via the state water project. So we commend cities, Los Angeles, Santa Monica, Long Beach, for actually doing the right thing by reducing their dependence and reducing imports from the Delta. This project intended to sustain massive levels of exports. It goes in the wrong direction. And we have to really look at the politics as to why. You look at Stuart Resnick, the owner of Paramount Farms, one of the single largest political contributors to the Democratic Party, to former Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, to Senator Feinstein, to Governor Brown, and the type of power he's been able to wield in demanding excessive amounts of water. And the same goes for the oil companies of Kern County, who have been spending more than any other industry in fighting fracking regulation in the state legislature. So we really do have to follow the money, and that tells more about the economic picture. Last point about the other player, Westlands Water District, and we start to look at some of the real illogical problem with this entire project. Much of Westlands soil is contaminated with selenium, and they have to use lots of water to flush the land just to make it arable. And we know in the next 10, 20, 30 years, that land is just going to get too salty, and it's going to have to go out of production. And they are one of the biggest exporters out of the Delta. This raises the concern that over time, they're simply looking to go in the water business and sell the water itself is going to become the cash crop. Right now, they're making a lot of money exporting almonds overseas to China. About 80% of the almonds grown in California are exported, and they're making a lot of money. So it just does not make sense as a long-term project. A better solution rather than spending $50 billion on this project would be to retire that land, give fair compensation to those farmers, to the farm worker communities, stop pumping water to the Westlands Water District, and retire that land. And that could be done for $5 to $10 billion.
Great. Okay. Do you want to add anything to that, Doug? Adam says follow the money here.
Well, I guess we're also, I think, somewhat skeptical about the economic study report. Anyone who's seen the history of large infrastructure projects has seen that they seem to come in a little bit over budget now and again.
Come in over budget, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the other things that's really interesting in the study is that it doesn't yet allocate costs between contractors. And one of the questions is whether, you know, the agricultural districts, the agribusinesses in Westlands and Kern, can afford to pay their fair share. Or whether they're going to be asked to be, whether they're going to ask Southern California ratepayers to subsidize them. You know, right now, that's, I think, probably one of the biggest questions that's out there. And, you know, what might be the bill for a Southern California ratepayer or someone in Santa Clara, in San Jose, you know, do you want to be paying to help subsidize water supplies to Westlands and Kern is, you know, a question that hasn't really been asked that publicly yet.
And they're sometimes reselling this water.
They can. They absolutely can.
They have the right to do that.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things that's strange about California water law is that, you know, we have this history, this legal practice that first in time means first in right. And you get to keep that water. You can transfer it. You can sell it. And so, you know, we have water districts throughout the state that have water from the 1914, from 1890s. And so they get 100% of their supplies. And Westlands, who is last in line, gets 20 or 30%. And, you know, it doesn't seem fair, but that's the legal system that we have.
Interesting. Well, if we have time, we'll delve a little deeper into that. But I want to get to our callers. Let's go to GS in Richmond. Welcome to your call, GS.
Yes, thank you very much. Make it quick. To understand what's really behind the increasing stress on our water resources, all you have to do is just do a search for graph of California population. You'll get a whole, you know, many pages of excellent graphs that show you all kinds of different ways of looking at what's going on. But the essence of what's going on is that we are growing exponentially in terms of our numbers. And the water resources are finite resources. We're just beginning to hit the ceiling, and it's just going to get worse.
Well, stay on the line for a second, GS, because sure. I actually want Doug to respond to this, because Doug has said it's a false choice to decide between a Delta plan and water supply to the state. We can reduce our reliance on the Delta. And one of the things that you found, Doug, is like in L.A., they've added population and are using less water because of innovation and conservation, right? So there are ways that...
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, you have to remember that 70 to 80% of the water use in California goes to agriculture. You know, we have more than 8 million acres of irrigated farmland throughout the state, and 15 to 20% go to urbans. You know, Los Angeles added more than a million people between the 1970s and 1990s and uses basically the same amount or less water than they did today. And it's all these little things like low-flow toilets, low-flow sprinkler heads, improved irrigation practices, using those weather-based controllers so that you time your sprinklers and you're not watering your sidewalk. And it adds up. I mean, it seems really small, but urbans can use less water and you know, account for population growth.
MGS, I think you're still on the line. Did you want to respond to that? Go ahead.
Yes. Well, very simply, around 1900, we had a population in the state somewhere between 1 and 2 million people. Now we're up to 35 or 40 million people, and we cannot grow beyond 50 or 60 before we will simply run out of water. Yes, of course, we can reduce our individual usage. We can ration water. We can, you know, take one shower with one bucket of water. But if the population continues to grow exponentially, there is no way to escape it. We're going to run out of the water resource and a lot of other ones.
Well, thank you for the call, GS. We appreciate it. You're listening to Your Call. I'm Holly Kernan. We're talking about the proposed Bay Delta Conservation Plan and asking the question, how do we equitably distribute water and its costs in California? You can join our conversation at 866-798-8255. Again, that number is 866-798-8255. Talk. It's a toll-free number. I'm joined in studio by Doug Obigi. He's a senior attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. And Adam Scow is with us on the line. He's the California Campaign's director at Food and Water Watch. And the number to join our discussion about the proposed Bay Delta Conservation Plan to build twin tunnels under the Delta is 866-798-8255. Or you can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org. And Lily had a question, which she said, you know, it seems like there's no easy solution. So what do we agree on? And that would be interesting to hear from Adam and Doug. What do you agree on here?
I'll start. I mean, I think we agree on a lot. You know, I think the environmental community is largely united around the idea that we need to take less water from the Delta. We need to invest in, you know, a 21st century water policy that makes conservation, water recycling, stormwater capture the hallmark of where we're going to get our water, and that we need to improve conditions for fish and wildlife. You know, I think that there aren't a lot of silver bullets out there. We've been fighting over water since we became a state, even before we became a state. So to think that we're going to solve every problem, probably not going to happen. But there's a lot of, you know, a lot of common ground within the conservation community.
And what, Adam, do you have something to add to that before I go to more calls?
Well, yeah, no, I agree with that. The problem is the powers that be that are running this project and calling the shots on state water policy are taking a different approach. So as Mark Twain said about California water, whiskey is for drinking and water is for fighting over. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. We have to do that. That is a burden that is being imposed upon us by the Westlands Water District and Kern County Water Agency. Frankly, they're trying to take too much of our water, and we have to stop them. And that's just how these battles play out. That's California politics, and we need people to engage in order to protect our public resource.
And let's go to William in Belvedere, who wants to engage with us. Hi, William. Welcome to your call.
Yes, thank you very much. I appreciate the knowledge that the people are imparting. However, I would call for less talk and more action. We've been given websites, three different websites to contact, to determine information, to get more information. These days, with so many issues, people need help in deciding what to do. Of course, otherwise we just move on to something else. What is the legislation involved? Is there a ballot initiative? Which assemblyman is carrying which legislation? Which state senator should we ask to support which legislation? That's what we need. We need, quite frankly, we need not more information, we need less information, and just enough information to decide what the right policy is, and then 9/10 of the effort, in my opinion, to be focused on concrete measures to take. And although I appreciate the knowledge that's being imparted, so far I know absolutely nothing about what I should do when this radio show ends.
All right, so let's answer William. What do you think William should be doing? What are the actions that he needs to take?
Well, I'm happy to start
Adam,
with
yeah.
that. The first, there's a lot of different avenues here, different tracks. There's litigation. There are campaigns in key places where the water district is potentially on the hook for this project. And so that's the Santa Clara Valley Water District in Southern California. For folks who don't live in those areas, I would say get in touch with your state assembly member and your state senator and tell them about your concerns about this project, your outright opposition, whatever it is, because the state legislature is considering a tinkering with the water bond currently slated for the November 2014 ballot. Now, currently in that water bond, there's some money for restoration, mitigation tied with the tunnels project. In our opinion, that's inappropriate because of the way this tunnels project is shaping out, and we don't expect it to change. We think there's a better use of that money to be invested in the water infrastructure projects such as stormwater, wastewater, helping poor communities who don't have clean drinking water, and that's a better priority of our money. And that's what we would encourage you to do, William. Get in touch with your state assembly member, your state senator, and we can also, we do presentations. If you get in touch with us at Food and Water Watch, We can give a talk on this issue and give you some more options on how to take action.
And Doug, I wonder, is part of the problem in terms of having clear, concerted actions for people to plug into that there isn't a consensus from the conservation community?
I think that the challenge is that there's not yet a public project. You know, when a draft document comes out this fall, probably, and it really lays out what the proposed project is, you know, I think that's going to really harden everyone's positions, and people are going to have to choose, you know, whether they support that project or not. So that's the other avenue that the public can really weigh in on, is making public comments on this document when it comes out. Because, you know, the legislature's role is really kind of indirect. They have the power to rewrite the water bond, which the state administration, Jerry Merrill, has said is a referendum on BDCP. And it could provide money that would be used to implement this plan. But that's really the only role for the legislature right now. So writing comments to the state and federal agencies, explaining your concerns and pushing for a better project is, I think, the other avenue for the public to speak out.
And Catherine from Richmond writes, a good source for citizens who want to begin to learn about the importance of the Delta and how fragile its geology and ecosystem are is the late Mark Reiser's A Dangerous Place, California's Unsettling Fate. Reisner also wrote the now classic Cadillac Desert and spent much of his short life trying to inform the public about the dislocation between water politics and the natural environment in California. Thank you for that email, Catherine. And let's go to more of our callers. George in San Francisco, welcome to your call.
Hi. You know, a couple of calls ago, someone contributed the notion that we have a finite supply of water. And to start with, we wish we had a finite supply of water. We've come from a period when we had water plentiful everywhere except Southern California, and we could ship lots of water to Southern California and other arid zones. But now we're entering a period of climate instability. So to what extent does this project reckon with the uncertainty of water futures? Are we blue skying it here, so to speak, or do you actually project that there will be water to deliver?
Doug, yeah.
Well, you know, I think the caller is totally right. Climate change is going to have a real massive effect on California's water supply systems. And in their plans right now, they're projecting that climate change alone will reduce the availability of water for export under this plan by, I think, around 500,000 acre feet by 2060. So it's a massive amount of water, you know, almost 10% of the water supply. And the state has projected that we'll lose 25% of our water supply by 2100 as a result of climate change. You know, to our view, that just reinforces the need to reduce our reliance on the Delta and to invest in conservation and recycling and local supply sources that hopefully will be less affected by climate change. But it's going to be a real challenge going forward. We may have a finite amount, but it's a finite and shrinking amount.
And let's go to Earl in Santa Cruz. Hi, Earl. Welcome to your call.
You have Colonel Terry in Santa Cruz.
Okay. Welcome.
Fair enough. Fundamentally, my perspectives include working at the White House Science Office years ago and also knowing a lot about the California water issues, being a Santa Cruz resident where we have concerns. The big question, ladies and gentlemen, that you're not addressing and that our political leadership is sweeping under the rug is our species has been worldwide too successful. We have too many people living on this planet consuming all the resources, including the available water. We have too many people in California for the available water supplies, realistically. I'd have you address that. That's what our politicians should be talking about. We should have a population policy that recognizes the limits. And lastly, I'd like you to react to my suggestion that Northern California long ago should now definitely secede, separate itself from Southern California. It would give the California populations 4 senators instead of 2, and most importantly, Northern California would not be hostage to the profligate demands of Southern California with its overpopulation and its overdemand to its water resources.
All right, well, let me take that. Thank you for your call, Terry. Let's leave the secessionist debate to the side, but let's talk about that idea of diverting Northern California water down to Southern California, down to the deserts, to Central California. Adam, what's your opinion on that and the other question of overpopulation and not enough water?
Yeah, well, there's some points there that are worthy of discussion. You know, this has historically been framed as a North versus South, but I try to shy away from that, and in many of my presentations, I defend L.A., even though I'm a San Franciscan. Really, I see the big problem, again, in the Westlands Water District and the Kern County Water Agency in Central California, in that San Joaquin Valley, demanding more and more water, imposing this project upon all of us. Earlier, we discussed how L.A., despite population growth, uses less water today than it did 30 years ago. That's a great thing. And yet, you look at irrigation and landscapes around our state, not just Southern California, we're growing grass, and keeping that grass green in the summer takes a lot of water. So it's been estimated that 50% of the residential use is used in outdoor landscaping. So there's a long way to go there to make improvements. Agricultural efficiency, we're just beginning to make some gains, but it's been very difficult to regulate agricultural water because of the power of their lobby in Sacramento. We do a terrible job in California protecting our groundwater. The State Water Board does not consider it a public trust resource and does not manage it that way as it does surface water. So we're seeing all sorts of problems with overdrafting and pollution.
Do you both agree, Adam and Doug, that the needs of agriculture interests in California are a big part of this problem?
Certain agricultural interests. Westlands and Kern do not speak and do not account for most of the production in the state of California. The east side of the valley is a much different picture. They're getting a lot of water from the Sierras. So we're really talking about the two most powerful, but not the bulk of California agriculture. And I really think it's important for us to be specific about where the pressure is coming from. It's Westlands and Kern. And the other thing about growth that is worthy of discussion, because as the water itself becomes more valuable and leads to more resale deals, one farmer made $70 million in selling his water to a Mojave Desert developer. So Metropolitan is also looking at selling more water out to desert development. And we need to ask, is that sustainable? And we really need to start dealing with the fact that there should be limits on how much water we export out of the Delta, where we grow future populations. Does it make sense to put 10 more million people out in the desert or in places that don't have reliable water supply? And how does this project perpetuate that? You look at master plan developments on Tejon Ranch on the Grapevine between Bakersfield and L.A., Newhall Ranch. These developers are looking to buy water from Kern County or other places to get their developments built. That's not sustainable.
And
why? Reason to oppose this project.
Who is working on reforming that water rights system? Because it seems to be fundamentally flawed. As an outsider, just hearing this, that we're diverting water down to agricultural interests and water contractors that then can just sell that. I don't understand this. It's subsidized, right?
It is subsidized in part. The Central Valley Project. Contractors like Westlands don't have to repay any interest on the loans that were taken out to build the project back in the 1960s. So it's a massive subsidy. It's a strange system, our water rights system. It's kind of common across the West that first in time means first in right. And, you know, you have these districts that were established 100 years ago, and water is seen by the law in part as a property right. There are a lot of exceptions to that. And we've obviously over-allocated our resources, and that's the big challenge. You know, the state has promised 8 times more water rights than there is water on average from the Bay Delta. And finding a way to balance those needs with the needs of fish and wildlife is our penultimate challenge.
And let me just ask a quick question from Bart in Oakland. Bart, I apologize that we don't have time to get you on, but he's got a potential solution. He says there's no lack of water in the oceans. We should get desalination machines. What do you think of desalination, Adam?
It's not worth it. It's not a solution to our water problems. It's extremely expensive. It is the most energy intensive source of water. And for all the money you spend, you just don't get that much. It can be a supplement at best. And you also got major environmental concerns around the coast. So the best way to fix our water problems is to become more efficient, to end bad practices like irrigating toxic soil in the Westlands Water District, and to start recycling more water, to clean up groundwater. We have the solutions. We need to create a political movement to do that. Our first order of business is to stop the tunnels. so we can have the funds we need and have the political will to change water policy in the state.
So how do we build that political movement that isn't just destructive, that isn't just about stopping something, but that is much more proactive and comprehensive? Let me go to Doug on this, Adam.
Well, you know, I think there is a real challenge there, and I think all of us are trying to point to solutions that we can get behind, whether that's, you know, part of bond funding for groundwater cleanup and conservation practices, whether it's working with our local water districts and asking them to make sure that we're using less water and we're using it more responsibly. But it's a real challenge, and, you know, fundamentally, the Bay-Dolts Conservation Plan is going to be sort of sucking all the oxygen out of the room. And I'm hopeful, or I guess I hope that we get to a project that we can support, but we're not there yet. And if not, then I think it will become a massive fight, potentially on the lines of what we went through in 1982.
And Adam, just 30 seconds to, I know you wanted to respond as well.
Well, sometimes you have to fight the bad in order to be able to do the good. And when you hear of all the problems with the resale and the problems of California water policy, we're just beginning our movement to democratize our water system and to take back control. So this is our first order of business. And water is for life, and fighting for water and building the type of water policy we need is something we will all work on through our lifetime. So there's no quick fix.
And we'll continue to cover it. We've got information at yourcallradio.org, including information about both of the organizations and others around this Bay Delta Conservation Plan proposed draft. And we've been speaking with Adam Scow, who's California Campaign's Director at Food and Water Watch, and Doug Obigi, who's the Senior Attorney with the Natural Resources Defense Council. Thank you both for joining us. We're going to put links again to all of that information on yourcallradio.org, including how you can read the draft plan and weigh in on it. You can continue the discussion there and post resources and ideas for action there. And I'm sorry we couldn't get to everybody. We had a lot of callers and emails. Again, you can continue the discussion at yourcallradio.org. I'm Holly Kernan, and this is Your Call. What did Martin Luther King Jr.'s I Have a Dream speech mean in 1963, and what does it mean today, 50 years later? On the next Your Call, we'll have a conversation with journalist and author Gary Young about his new book, The Speech, The Story Behind Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s Dream. Why has this speech enjoyed such widespread and lasting resonance? What do you remember from I Have a Dream? Join our conversation and ask your questions on Your Call with Rose Aguilar and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or to sign up for our podcasts, visit yourcallradio.org. You can also friend us on Facebook. Ali Budner and Malihe Razazan produced the show. Matt Martin is the executive producer. Phil Hartman is the chief engineer. Debbie Kennedy is our studio engineer. Our theme music was composed and performed by Live Human. Your Call is produced by KALW in San Francisco. Special thanks to our partners at KUSP in Santa Cruz. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.